Ron and Anian.
I want to talk to you about how things are antiquated and need to be updated, especially at motor vehicle agencies.
The Car Doctor.
At the very least, before you put it, you know, just start driving it, I would take it apart and look at everything. I would measure valve spring tension and just have a little concern about that.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron and Anian, The Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
So, listen to this story. Here's a real pip from the shop this week. We had a 2009, so right away you know it's a problem, right? It's an 11-year-old vehicle. And a 2009 Honda Civic that needed a starter. Now, you know, I go back to the days when starters were two bolts and literally 20 minutes, maybe a half hour on a hard car, and it was in and out. 2009 Honda Civic, the starter is mounted in the back of the engine, above the axle, above the front exhaust pipe. Here's a genius move. And, you know, after 11 years in North Jersey, New Jersey, North American roads, wherever the car is being driven, if it's in a salt belt state, which so many are, there's an issue. Everything corrodes. Aluminum block, aluminum starter housing, steel nose, everything just corrodes and rots together and becomes an indiscernible mass of a lump of something. Well, the starter went bad. It was easy enough to diagnose, but it needed to be replaced. And that's where the work gets cut out, right? So what used to be such a simple job on so many cars is now up in the air. The front exhaust pipe has to come down. It just makes life easier. It's part of the procedure. And I always read the procedure and then I look at it and say, is there an easier way to do this? Because I don't want to believe the guy that wrote the book. Yeah, you know, maybe he's up against some sort of corporate protocol that he has to describe every nut bolt, you know, take the gas cap out to remove the headlight kind of a guy. And just let's be sure. Yeah, you had to take the front exhaust pipe down. Now, how rusty, and you don't have to be a mechanic to answer this question, but in your head, just think. How rusty do you think an exhaust pipe is on a car that's been on the road 11 years? Yeah, take that image and double it, because that's what this was like. It was, you needed a tetanus shot just working on the thing, just looking at it, thinking about it. It was that rusty. So, you know, it was fortunately, and it's funny how you, I guess you get older and you're doing this long enough, you start to think to yourself, you know, how do you time the day? And I timed it so that the Honda went up in the air at about 11:30, 11:45, so it was just in time for lunch. So I sprayed, I got my PB Blaster, and I hit the front and the rear bolts of the cat pipe real heavy, or the exhaust pipe real heavy, with some PB, and just let it soak. And I'll tell you what, every time I use it, I just praise them. They're the ability to move that, the control valve, so you can control the flow and just get just enough so you're not spraying all over the place. But I got a good soaking on there, and I walked away, had lunch, came back, 45 minutes later. And I got to tell you, the bolts just came right out. It really was effortless. And the way I do it is I'll soak something, and then I'll use my weakest cordless impact, because I don't want to break something, and just enough to give it a hit because you want it to shock it, and then will it pull it out the rest of the way? And it did. My little Milwaukee 3/8 gun took it right out. Great. Exhaust pipe down. And then I started looking at the axle. So, gee, do I have to take the axle out? They want you to take the axle out. But to do that, I'd have to disconnect it at the suspension side. And that's just a big, rusty, nasty mess, even worse than the exhaust pipe, if you can believe that. And I said, let me try something different. And I was able to. I was able to sneak the starter once I got the bolts out, because that's the other problem, all right? The two bolts, they're 14-millimeter head bolts, and they are, the bottom bolt is easy enough to get to, but the top bolt, which is why they want you to take the axle out so you get some swing, is about 4 inches long, and it's butted right up against the underneath of the intake manifold, which hangs over the side. I'm telling you, it's a contortionist put this together. So, took off the right front tire, went through the wheelhouse, got out a good impact swivel with a lot of flex in it, got a good impact swivel, put on my half-inch gun, and bang, popped out the top bolt, popped out the top bolt, popped out the bottom bolt. Gee, you would think the starter should come out at this point. Well, I did, but unfortunately, it was corroded and, you know, stuck to the stuck to the transmission. So, you know, bang, 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 tap, 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 nothing's moving. Soaked it with a little PB, came back about 20 minutes later, got the starter out. And it's just the whole point of this conversation is you can look in the book. The book tells you it's 6/10 of an hour to change a starter on an 09 Civic, meaning it's a little over a half hour's worth of time. Yeah, it probably is a little over a half hour's worth of time on a new car where everything physically unbolts, everything comes out, and you've got all your tools lined up and you've done 20 of them. But on that car that rolls in that's 11 years old, that you haven't done one in a while, and it's not that it's a technically challenging job, it's a thinking job, and it's to the customer's advantage not to run through it quickly, because that's how other things get broken. And, you know, you've got to expect, if you're driving, and most of you are driving cars 6 years old or older now, because the age of the fleet is huge. The age of the fleet, I think, is on average 11 or 12 years old. That's an old car. Think about all the winters. Think about all the rough weather. Think about all the possibility of road debris, corrosion, things that can go wrong and hit that item and cause it to solidify, shall we say. So you've just got to be mindful of that. And then you've got to be mindful of, does your illustrious, wonderful supercar, whatever it might be in your mind, your Toyota, your Honda, your Ford, your GM, I know we all love our cars and a lot of good vehicles out there, but none of them are perfect and they all have their issues and they all have their parts in really stupid locations. And sooner or later, somebody's got to come along and fix them. And it's either you or it's the mechanic, but somebody's going to have to. And just be mindful. If it's him, consider what they're going through and don't push them for the cheapest job. Push them for the best job and the most thorough job and the least intrusive is the way I like to think it. Because I'm happy. You know what? Starter went on, pipe went back up, didn't damage anything, didn't break anything. Not that we try, not that we, you know, that's a big deal. But it is a big deal because you can turn around and say, hey, we took your 11-year-old car apart, put it back together, gave it back to you just the way we found it, plus a starter, so now it runs. You're good to go. And that, to me, is a very complete and a very solid kind of auto repair. Hello and welcome. Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor here. 855-560-9900 is the phone number. We got a lot going on this hour and next hour, if you're so fortunate to take both. I want to do a real quick shout out and welcome back KXEL out in Iowa. They are now airing the show again, and we thank our KXEL family for being so supportive of us. I understand that the radio station got more than a few emails and phone calls, and over time, you know, hey, we want the Car Doctor back, and the Car Doctor's happy to be here for you, and especially to Dave out in Iowa. We know Dave's a big fan of this radio show, and we just wanted to do a shout-out to him and say we hope he and everyone else out there, KXEL way in Iowa, have a great, great, great weekend. So thank you once again. Let's kick the garage doors open, and let's do what the Car Doctor likes to do best and have the most fun with. Let's go talk to Al in Maryland, 99 Nissan Sentra and some EVAP codes. Al, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Hi, Ron. Long-time listener. I learn something from your show every week, and I thank you for that. 99 Nissan Sentra, 263,000 miles.
Wait for it. Wait for it. Wait for it. Just broken in, brother. Go ahead.
Just broken in. Runs great, but recently started throwing some EVAP codes. 0440 and a 1448, which is vent control valve open.
Right.
Now, I've got the factory service manual for it, so I started going through the diagnostic procedure. First thing they ask you to do is to check the hoses around the canister and the O-ring that sits between the vent control valve and the canister. So a couple of the hoses were in lousy shape. I straightened that out. I pulled the vent control back from the canister, looked at the O-ring. It looked okay, but I coated it with some anti-seize compound.
Yeah, something to seal it, because that O-ring will shrivel over time.
Yeah. Well, I tried to seal it, erased the codes, but the codes came right back.
Okay.
So the next test is to bench test it. It's got a solenoid in it. You put 12 volts on it, see if the solenoid closes.
Right.
So I tried to take the vent control valve off. I can unbolt it from the canister, but the electrical connector will not come off.
Yeah,
I
that's...
Shot it with
Boy, let me tell you.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead, because I know what you're going to say. Go ahead, Al.
I shot it with PD Blaster, and, you know, it's the two-prong tab with the little tab in the middle that you're supposed to press down and in.
Yep.
I could get the tab to press down and in, and I actually could hold it to press with a small vice grips. So I know it's not the tab that's holding it up, but I shot more PD Blaster at it, hung it upside down, let it sit overnight so that the penetrant could get in. This thing will not come apart.
Yeah, the problem with them is, here, let me just jump in. The problem with these, Al, is dirt and crud accumulates inside the connector.
Yeah.
This is right up there with Honda Civic starter locations, okay? This is an exercise in stupidity.
Yep.
They make it so that instead of pulling up on it, you have to push in on the plunger to release the safety tab under the lock and then pull the connector off. So it's a push-in, pull-out kind of motion. It might work great in a laboratory with white lab suited technicians and no dust or dirt, but put it on the road for 11 or 12 years, put it on the road for 20 years.
Doesn't work.
Oh yeah, it doesn't work. Now, what I would tell you is, so you get a sense of feel, the way I taught myself how Nissan connectors come apart, go under the hood and find one that you can get apart.
Yeah, I did that.
Okay. So, there you go. All right. Now you understand what the feel is, right?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So.
And I tried, like I said, I held the tab down with a vice grips, one jaw on the plastic piece in the middle, the other jaw on the connector. So I held it in place. So I don't believe it's hung up on the tab, but that thing just will not come apart.
Right.
And so my fear is that what's happened is the electrical terminals inside the connector have corroded and seized, and it's not and it won't come apart because it's seized internally. It's not that the plastic won't slide; it's that the internal terminals are frozen.
Very possible.
And if that's the case, that might explain the codes, because if ECM can't get 12 volts to the vent control valve, it can't close it, and so it throws the vent control valve open code.
Right.
And if it can't close that valve, then it can't do a leak test on the EVAP system, and it throws the 440 code.
Right.
So I'm coming to the conclusion the problem is not in the EVAP system. The problem is in that stinking connector.
Well, we won't know till we get it apart. So you can attack this one of two ways. All right.
Go ahead.
You're not going to find a connector from either Nissan or a parts house,
right?
Because I don't believe anybody just makes a connector for that.
I can't find anything.
Their mentality is you need a connector, buy the whole wiring harness.
Another
genius idea. Or come buy a new car. You know, Al, if you'd stop driving this car with 260,000 miles on it, come buy a new car. So you're either going to go to a scrap yard, a salvage yard, and find a Nissan, something similar that generation that's got a connector that you can get apart, and then cut yours and then solder splice that in so you can maintain the factory connector, or you're going to look at that new. Did you get a new solenoid yet? Do you have a new
Not
one?
Not yet.
Okay.
Not yet.
So at this point, you're probably better off buying a solenoid because they're not terribly expensive. I think they're $50-$60. I don't think they're a lot of dough. And then you can look at the spade terminal on it, you know, and think to yourself, could you use just two spades? All right.
Yeah.
Onto that.
Then either
RTV. Seal the top of the bent solenoid, you know, just put some RTV around it to weatherproof it, or pack it with grease, or, like I said, find a connector from a salvage yard in order to, you know, move this along.
You know what I did? I looked on eBay, found the solenoid valve, and, of course, the pictures, some of them, you can magnify them. It looks to me like, because that's exactly what I thought, I could put a couple of spade connectors on there. But those two terminals are awfully close together. I don't think I can get two spade terminals in there. And, of course, they're depressed. They're inside the plastic housing vent control valve.
Right.
So, I'm really at my wit's end to try to get this sucker apart.
I'll tell you what, Al. Stay put. Let me pull over, take a pause. We'll finish when I come back. I ran over. Don't go away. I'm Ron Anian, the Car Doctor. We'll return right after this.
For the best in car advice, give Ron a call, 855-560-9900. Now, back to Ron.
Al, you're still there, sir.
Absolutely.
So what you've got to do is, listen, this has got to go one of two ways. You're either going to get a new solenoid so that you can see how the terminals are set up.
Right.
All right. Or you're going to try and find the connector first, but you've got to attack it from one end or the other. Now, the other thing you could do, or both, the other thing you could do is get to the connector and give yourself enough room so you can repair it and put it back together if you have to, but cut the wire. All right?
Yeah.
Get it off the car. Yeah. At least get it off the car so you can work at it in a normal position.
And then splice it back together.
But, you know, then you can see which is power, which is ground. Put your 12, put your ground. And then at least you can test the solenoid. It's going to be vented when you've got no power to it, and it's going to be closed when you apply power to it.
That's correct. At least you
can see, does it work? All right.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing you can do, there are companies out there that do supply, because you got to remember the manufacturers, the OEs don't necessarily make, connectors. There are companies out there that supply it to the original manufacturers. Now, 99's a little long. All right. It was 21 years ago. There's not a lot of these cars left. But you could possibly, you know, look around the internet and see, does anybody make the OEM connector for that? I've done that on older GMs and older Fords, and I found just connectors where they said, no, you have to buy a whole harness. Or you're just going to find and buy a used harness. You know, sometimes you call up a scrapyard, and I don't care where they are, but find a scrapyard that'll sell you a wiring harness for that generation vehicle. If you're planning to keep the car, brother, for what might be $100, you'll get the entire harness. You can pick connectors off there all day long.
Let me ask you one last thing,
real
Ron.
Quick.
I know this is going to be a treasure hunt. I realize that. Let me ask you one last thing.
Real quick.
What if I just ignore it and keep driving the thing? Because the vent control valve, as far as I can determine, this is not the purge valve. The purge valve is what passes the vapors from the canister to the intake manifold. As far as I can tell, the only thing this valve does is isolate the EVAP system from the atmosphere so that the ECM can do a leak test on the EVAP system.
Well, that's part of it, but it also allows the ECM, when it wants to scavenge fumes out of the canister at the proper time. But the bigger problem is going to be is that the check engine light will continue to be on, right? And you won't pass Maryland inspection because you'll have a fault code set. And an even bigger problem will be that vehicle, if it sets an additional fault, and let's face it, 21 years old, 260,000 plus miles, the chance of it setting a fault are probably pretty good. So how will you know? And you won't. So, you know, if you're going to drive it, you've maintained it this far, continue to maintain it, Al. Keep it a safe vehicle and let the check engine light do its job. I get it. You know, you could drive with it on. It's not going to hurt you, but in the long term, it may hurt the car, which in turn will hurt you. Appreciate the call. I'm Ron Ananian and the Car Doctor. We're back right after this. Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Let's get over to Albert in Virginia with a 93 Crown Vic. Albert, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Hey, buddy. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
For taking your time to speak with me today.
My pleasure.
My 1993 Crown Victoria, picked it up on the side of the road for $800, replaced all the, what I call, anyway, stuff that you're going to have to replace anyway, you know, so brakes, cylinders, L5, my mind is going blank. But anyway, calipers, you know.
Yeah, you did a brake overhaul. You did a brake overhaul, Albert.
I did so, and it's, I'm sorry, but it's Oliver.
Oh.
But anyway, you know, you could drive a thing for 3 months and everything is great, hard pedal, and then all of a sudden, bam, the pedal goes to the floor.
Okay, so let me ask you this, Oliver. You just got the car this Saturday, or you've been driving it for a while?
Oh, no, I've had it, I'd say, when did we buy the car, baby? Hell, it's been 3 years since I bought the car.
Okay. When you bought the car, you did a brake overhaul. Pads, rotors, calipers, wheel cylinders, that kind of stuff.
Put a brand new set of Michelins on that.
Okay.
If they sold a Michelin for a wheelbarrow, I'd have it on my wheelbarrow.
Right. Yeah.
Michelin tires. I mean, everything's good.
Did you happen to replace the master cylinder?
I did.
Okay. And you're saying every couple of 3 months you get a hard brake pedal, or the brake pedal drops to the floor?
No, the brake pedal's hard all the time, and then all of a sudden, to the floor. And to the floor twice, and it ain't like you're pumping it up. It's to the floor twice, and then you got a hard brake again.
Okay. When you say hard, are you talking about it feels like the vehicle doesn't have power brakes? You know, like manual brakes? Is it a high pedal effort compared to other vehicles you've driven?
Just like I say, all at once, it goes to the floor, and you go to the floor twice, and then you got normal brake action again.
Okay. Anybody try to diagnose this?
You just got to move your foot a half an inch, and you got brake, you know.
Right.
And, I mean, it ain't that much, and you got brake. But then all of a sudden, the Haynes manual is better than nothing, but it talks about the HCU, the hydraulic control unit.
And it
tells me that I'm not able, once I take, the master cylinder off of there, that it can't be done at the house. You can't bleed the brakes at the house.
Probably can't. So let me ask you a couple of questions, Oliver. All right.
Yes, sir.
When you purchased the master cylinder, was it new or rebuilt?
Well, I can't tell you.
All right.
I got it from Advanced over there. I really can't tell you.
All right. Do you remember what you paid for it?
Oh, yeah. 35, 45, I don't
right.
It's been a while back.
Right,
know.
Yeah, no, I get it. So, the first thing I would do is, listen, you gotta cover the basics, right? I'm sure somebody or you've looked it over, there's no physical leaks, you don't see a loss of fluid anywhere, and that the hydraulics, everything is dry. That's step one, all right?
Correct.
Are you adding any brake fluid to the master over a period of time at all?
Nothing.
Okay, so it's not losing fluid. So
no, sir.
It's either something is bypassing, all right, or we've got a defective component. There's only two real components in this system that are going to allow this to happen. One's the master, and the other is the hydraulic control unit, all right, the ABS control. Now, for a 93, I doubt that HCU, that hydraulic control unit, is even available anymore. So
is that the electrical component that's over top of the radiator?
Yeah, yeah. So
it says in this book that they need to have a
scan tool to bleed it.
Yeah, some kind of tool to put
right.
on there that
right.
they don't have at the house.
Before I went through all that, Oliver, all right, I would want to know, is this a remanned master cylinder? If this is a remanned master cylinder and not new, I would start with a fresh new master cylinder. Bleed the system. Does the problem go away? Only because you're limited.
Okay.
Only because you're limited by what you can do. Now, Advance may still warranty that master, or at the very least, they should have records where I bet you could go back. I know they can go back 2 years. I don't know if they can go back three. But they may be able to find that invoice if you can give them a time frame. And if you can't find your
original
invoice.
Well, even if I got to pay for a brand new one, I don't want the brakes to.
Well, yeah,
I
get that, brother. But I'm just saying it would help in the diagnosis to know, is this a remand or a new? All right? And if this is a remand, I never use remanufactured brake components when it comes to master cylinders. Calipers, yes. Wheel cylinders, it hasn't been an issue for 20 years. Would I? No, I'd just pay for a new one. They're cheap enough. But master cylinders, there's too much going on there, all right? And this could all be over a master cylinder that's just, it's a 93.
The car is almost 30 in 93, 2003. Was it almost 30 years old? It's 27 years old.
Right.
You know, so I would start with a master. If that doesn't do it for you and you've got to get into the hydraulic control unit, one of the things you could do is unplug the electrical control. All right. In other words, just disconnect the electrical plug from the hydraulic control unit. Drive the car. Right. Now, you won't have anti-lock brakes, and a warning light's going to come up on the dashboard, all right?
Right.
But it will prevent that control unit from possibly, if this is an electrical issue. See, the problem is you could have an electrical issue in that control unit, putting the system in, putting the system into bypass mode, causing the pedal to drop.
Yeah, because it ain't like the front or the back.
Right.
A master cylinder, I would think it would be the front or the back would have an issue.
Well, if it's
is the whole damn brake pedal going to the floor.
Well, this could also just be a bad master letting the pedal go to the floor too. Like I said, there's only one of two possibilities. If there's no leaks, if all the if the hydraulic controls at each wheel check out correctly, all right, there's only other two possibilities, master or the hydraulic control unit itself, and that's the way I would approach it, all right? That's why I'm taking the time with you here, all right, kiddo? So do that. I would go talk to the guys in advance. Maybe they'll warranty it. Maybe they can at least identify, is this a reman or not? You'll know that by the price of the new one, but you want to get a new master cylinder, especially for a vehicle that old, and then go out and bleed the system and go through it very carefully. Let me know how you make out, Oliver, and we'll hope that it all works out for you. 855-560-9900. Ron and Andy, the Car Doctor, coming back right after this. Welcome back. Ron and Andy, the Car Doctor. Let's get over and talk to Rich in Massachusetts. Rich, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. Thanks for waiting. How can I help?
I got a 2011 Buick Lucerne, and I've got a transmission problem.
Okay.
Now, for the last 90,000 miles, you stop at an intersection, and then you start up again. The engine spins as if in neutral for a split second, and then it catches gear and jerks forward.
For the last 90,000 miles?
Yes, my father bought this car when it had 20,000 miles on it about 9 years ago, and I've got the car now. I got 113,000 miles on it, and it just does that.
Okay. So can I ask why you're worried about it now? Just out of curiosity?
Well, I didn't know if it would be expensive to have the transmission rebuilt, or if it might get worse.
Well, has it been the same consistency for the past 9 years and or 90,000 miles worth? Like it's never gotten any worse. Guess what? Yeah, it's going to be expensive.
Yeah.
Speedometer work okay? No problems with the way the speedometer is reading or displaying on the dashboard.
Right.
All other shifts are okay. No, are they, Rich? All other shifts are okay. You know, I mean, somebody would need to diagnose and go in and look to see, you know, what sort of inputs are coming on and you know what sort of command the PCM is sending out at different times for the pressure control solenoid to create this. But especially pulling away from a stop, this sounds like a primer and engagement issue. Has the trans ever been serviced?
No, it's been flushed out about 50,000 miles ago.
Okay.
The transmission fluid changed.
Okay.
Other than that,
so what's expensive to you that you wouldn't fix this? More than 500?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Guess what? I just saved you a bunch of money. Yeah. You're done. You know, I get where you're coming from, and it sounds like there's something broken, but whatever it is, it's you know, whether this is something that's, you know, we've got a seal that's momentarily bypassing until it spins up fast enough, whether this is a converter problem, whether this is something electronic, you know, after 9 years and 90,000 miles, you know, it's sort of, because it sort of doesn't matter what you find. unless it's something external that can be that you're going to screw into the side of the transmission or you know a connector or a ground or something. If you take the trans out of the 9-year-old car, the car spent its whole life in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
So everything's nice and rusty and crunchy. Aren't you gonna?
Yeah.
Aren't you gonna rebuild that trans? So you go another 9 years in theory.
Yeah.
Right. I just saved you $4,000. See that?
Okay.
Now, if the trans were to fail. And, you know, then you want to go through and do a diagnosis. Because there's no check engine light on right now, right, Rich?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, you know, my guess is it's something more mechanical that isn't affecting any input sensor to the PCM, and that's why you're not seeing a fault light. But it doesn't sound like something that's going to be resolved for under $500, if I have to put a number on it.
Okay. Regarding transmission flush, or just drop the pan and change the filter, I've heard some mechanics are getting away from the complete transmission flush because it just, somebody said that it distributes particles throughout the transmission and causes problems. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, yeah. My feeling is if the trans is that sensitive, I want to know about it. I want to know that it's going to fail. Now, I'll explain it like this, and I tend to look at trans service on a case-by-case basis. The regular customers at the shop that have been in on regular scheduled maintenance, and we've done the 30, the 60, the 90, I never have to think about it because I know when the fluid was changed last. And if they want to do pan drops and filters, if that's the case, I get it. Some people opt for a pan and filter drop and we'll do a fluid exchange. I won't do it at 30. Maybe I'll do it at 60, and then I'll do a pan drop at 30, and then I'll do a fluid exchange with a pan drop at 120. But, you know, the one guy who shows up at 100,000 miles and says, gee, I want to do a fluid exchange, you know, this is an interesting scenario. Because now the problem becomes fresh transmission fluid has a very high scrubbing detergent action to it. So you take this 80, 90, 100,000 mile transmission that's got varnish and particulate built up on the sidewalls, internal case of the trans, and you put this fresh fluid in there that can now scrub away at all that particulate, and you can create problems, and that's where the faults come from. That's where the trans breaks down, because the transmission works on hydraulic circuits, right? It's all, you know, flowing through passageways, in some cases smaller than the eye of a needle. Now you clog it with particulate. So what would I do at this case, 113,000 miles? I'd probably do a pan drop and just keep an eye on the fluid, and maybe in 10,000 miles go back and then do an exchange if the trans holds up to that. But I wouldn't spend too much more than that on this, because it is 9 years old and it does sound like it has an inherent problem. And I don't want you to spend, you know, the king's ransom trying to resurrect something that, you know, 9 years old may have an additional problem. Just keep an eye on the fluid level, condition, and color. I appreciate the call, Rich. Good luck to you and yours. I'm Ron Ananian, the car doctor. We're back right after this.
Every highway, let me slip away on you. Every highway.
Hey, welcome back. Ron Ananian, the car doctor. Remember last week I was telling you about how I got the letter from New Jersey Motor Vehicle? Because when I renewed the plow truck online, it was $7 more than the form that they had sent me in the mail. And they sent me a letter saying that the form in the mail was incorrect. And after I had renewed online, they sent me a letter stating that the form in the mail was incorrect and that if I renewed online, I would get it right. So after the fact, like 2.5 weeks after the fact, I get a notice that there's a potential problem. I ignored it. See, they're teaching you to ignore things. I think that's part of the DMV's plan here in New Jersey. So I ignored it. The next mail day, Monday, my registration shows up, all taken care of, no problem. So I don't understand. I mentioned this to Danny at the shop this week, and he said, oh, you got that letter too? And he explained he had gotten the same thing. So it turns out New Jersey Motor Vehicle is apparently mailing out registration renewal forms, applying discounts that people aren't eligible for, creating more work. They have to now send out notices stating that, hey, we sent out a notice in error with the wrong information on it, and you should ignore that or contact us, and we'll make it right. If you live in New Jersey, you know what this is about. You've seen this. You've been to the Motor Vehicle Agency. You see how the lines are up and around the block, and you can't get anywhere close to any motor vehicle agency in New Jersey. There are people getting up at 3 a.m. going to camp out in front of motor vehicle so they can get there sometime during the 8-hour shift so they can get their paperwork done and their vehicles registered. Something's got to be done about motor vehicle. I realize it's not a big priority right now, but at some point in the future, it's got to happen. I'm Ron Ananian and the Car Doctor, reminding you this time till the next time, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.